Hello and welcome to Ops and Hops, a podcast for those who like beer but have to work in tech to afford it. Today I've got Christina Roberts, chairwoman of the board for the Agile Learning Institute. Welcome, Christina.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And what did you bring to drink today?
I drank, I brought a little bit of Reserve something or another red wine. So
fancy. That's perfect. I've decided to do a little bit of white wine. There's actually a little more than I expected, but you know, it is a Cape White Western Cape Vineyards 2023 vintage South African wine. That was a mouthful. Decided to switch it up, and you know, after enough hops in 1 or 2 weeks, you get a little sick of them, and it's nice to switch things up a little bit.
Yep, and so, I see we're doing fancy stuff here. You've got vintage, I've got reserve, so obviously we've made good decisions today.
I thought vintage meant kind of old. I didn't know that 2023 could be a vintage. I mean, I know that was all of last year now. It is 2024, but
yeah,
it seems a little desperate for a $5 bottle, but okay, whatever.
Roll with it.
Yeah, it's perfect. So anyway, yeah, thank you so much for joining the show. This is really cool, as you know, Agile is such a massive topic that some people avoid like the plague and some people absolutely love. And then you've got everybody who's caught in between that feel like they're in a meat grinder all day and can't understand what's important, what, you know, is wasting time, what's making things better, et cetera. So if you could tell us a little bit about what got you to where you are today.
Sure. So I have kind of an unconventional path into tech. Most of my adult life, I worked in the medical field. That's really long hours, really low pay, and really stressful work. I moved up to upstate South Carolina, actually, to take care of my dad because he had a stroke. So I've been working in the medical field. I somehow ended up with two brick and mortar thrift stores, which is a story for another day, and started taking care of my dad. He had a full recovery, so he's fine now. But when it was time to transition back into the workforce, I just started looking at, you know, going back in the medical field and could not do it. I had worked in trauma rooms and it was just too much trauma after all those years. So my brother worked in tech and he sent me a Python for Kids book. And so I learned how, you know, to get my feet into tech on like a desktop 1992 computer with a CD burner and worked through Python for Kids books. I did a couple of them, decided I loved it, and then discovered the next steps. You know, I went to a meetup, found out that there was a local boot camp, ended up getting a full scholarship from Facebook to go to the boot camp, which is amazing. Got gifted with a computer. Went in the first day, actually went in early because I was so new to tech that I had literally never owned an iPhone. So I went in early because this computer had the touch bar and I had no idea how to turn the computer on. So that's the point that we are starting from. But once I fell in love with tech and got more knowledge and more experience, it was just, you know, everything on deck, full speed ahead. And it's my new love of my career and kind of love my community passion and career passion has definitely collided in the area of tech.
Yeah, that makes sense. That's great. I know a lot of people have started with Python and it seems to be one of the best possible entries into tech. It is nice to see that you started with a programming language. It seems like a lot of people nowadays are, in a lot of cases, skipping programming entirely, which to me is kind of wild. You know, they're just like, oh, I'm just going to be a cloud engineer. And it's like, well, how do you have a clue what you're doing with these resources if you don't know how code works? So yeah. That's really cool. Is that Python for Kids book still around? Have you seen it? Do they keep it updated?
It is probably still around. It's on my bookshelf right now. I keep it here.
Oh, nice.
To, like, you know, remember my roots. I started with that one book and then I ended up going through 11 or 12 different books that obviously got higher level as we went. And then when I started the code school, then my horizons expanded because we were doing more than just Python. Obviously, we were getting into front end. I'd never heard of CSS before. learned that I hated JavaScript there. We didn't get a lot of exposure to the cloud stuff. It was really focused on the fundamentals and what is code, how does this work, and how do these things apply to, more than one language. So even though it was a short experience, it really catapulted me into, I had an internship after that where we worked on something totally different with DMARC and email security and just different things I hadn't been exposed to in code school necessarily because there wasn't time. So that was a really great experience. And then started, getting into my actual jobs, of course, then you just thrown in the deep end and you learn all kinds of stuff. Thankfully, I had probably, I'm going to say the best tech team that exists for that first job. And I'm going to say that because I feel that way, but also my old coworkers also like said the same sentiment. So that's, it settled for me. It was the best tech team out there. And had a really great opportunity to learn a lot of cloud stuff with the code, with refactoring legacy stuff, and just having a great time and learning a lot. So I don't know how anybody could just jump into cloud and not code. That doesn't make any sense to me, but we'll be praying for them.
Bless their hearts.
Yeah.
I'm from the South, I get it.
Yep, there you go.
So what would you say is probably, if somebody came up to you and just said, tell me right now the best, like your favorite project you've worked on that you're allowed to talk about?
So I'm probably gonna go in a different direction than you were expecting here, but my favorite project has
That's
really
fine.
been more on the people side. So my last role, I had an incredible opportunity to kind of create a path, create a career path for a lady who was coming from QA who wanted to become a software engineer. We work closely anyways, and then also mentor a lady who was coming out of a CS degree. So that was a really great experience to be able to mentor two ladies with totally different backgrounds, totally different cultures, one coming from the untraditional path, one coming from the collegiate path, and bring them into this is the overview of software development. This is the overview of governance and security. These are the things we look at. This is a pipeline. Talking through, code as they're writing it and not just saying, hey, this is the answer, this is the answer, but why did you think that? Hey, when we look at the bigger picture, what do you think about it fitting into the bigger picture now? How can we make this better for 2 years from now, not just now? Not over developing and over engineering, but just making smart decisions. So I really, really enjoyed basically being able to help set up a security and governance team and help bring these two ladies, from different areas into the world of software development. In the way that I wished I had been able to come in the first place, which is having that generalist view, having m exposure to a lot of different areas in tech and not just focusing on the one path. We work on the skills you're here to work on, but we also get to just look at the whole picture and how you get to fit in to corporate world, how you get to fit into a team, how you get to discover yourself in this process as well. So it was technical. It was not technical, but that's by far been my favorite experience. Having both of them at the same time, like that duality was very interesting to me. And I want to bring up the point that probably the most interesting thing is we have a lot of debate about degrees or no degrees and is it useful or who's better, blah, blah, blah. But both of these women, both of these humans came in with the same fears, the same excitements, the same questions. They were both wonderful and passionate. And so my answer now is it doesn't really matter. Like if you care and you're going to learn, that's what matters. So we should just get rid of that degree or no degree argument on LinkedIn in 2024, please.
Yeah, I totally agree. So between the two of them then, again, you're saying they're both coming from different areas. One was QA, one was CS. And I imagine the one QA basically, worked their way into that job one way or another, maybe up from somewhere or whatever they did to get through that little journey. But when they're both going for the same types of roles, I assume, they're both going for kind of the same stuff. Is that correct?
Yes.
Then, yeah, what would you say was the biggest overlap between the two, but then the biggest differences? Like where did you see them the most different? But then again, where did you see them the most the same when it came to your advice?
That's a good question. So the areas that they were most the same, is with them both coming into the field and being newer, even though one had a degree and one already had experience with our code base and everything, there's still that level of imposter syndrome. So I kind of hate the word imposter syndrome, but it's basically I'm new, I'm kind of scared. What am I doing? You know? So that's like across the board. And that's a really important point because we have a lady who just finished a college degree on this. It doesn't change feelings. You know, it doesn't change just not having experience and exposure on a corporate team and that experience of finding out where you fit in. They were both super passionate. They were both super like go get it, want to figure out the problem. They both were very much able to listen to other people on the team to seek advice and feedback, not asking everything, every single question they had, but you know, coming to a hypothesis and checking in, saying, hey, is this the right direction before I take more steps? Gathering just opinions from different places so they could kind of learn those best practices together. The areas that they were different, that now this may have nothing to do with their educational background because they're in two different regions of the world and two totally different cultures. So the only difference I would say is maybe the communication style. Or one taking longer to feel comfortable with speaking up in a meeting or making a proposal and deciding they want to, you know, to show it to the team and gather information that way. But really, they're the same. You know, they just love tech. They love this career path. They love the experience they're having and they love the learning. And that was really startling to me. There's almost no differences.
Yeah, no, that's kind of a thing. I mean, you know, school can prepare you for projects and stuff like that, you know, and they get the fundamentals down and all of that. But when you're dropped into something with a code base that's been worked on for who knows how long, and is just this giant mass of spaghetti and meatballs, it gets very tough to navigate that. You know, like in school, a lot of times you're getting handed either something that works that just needs the gaps filled in. You're getting handed a perfect environment where you just have to code and make it work, you know, or, you know, whatever. It's like you kind of don't get to look at something that a lot of people wrote in the moment that could be broken, that needed to be done to solve a problem overnight because prod was down on a Saturday, you know, that kind of stuff. So I think that's something that really, I imagine the QA engineer might have actually been more exposed to worse environments than the CS degree, but I'm not sure.
Well, definitely. And the QA lady, she had been working there for a while before the other one joined. So obviously she had more exposure to our systems and how things work. And the team that we were on, the problems that we aimed to solve really touched all of our applications, all of our code base, you know, the deployment pipeline, incident response. So they were really in a great position and poised to be able to have a lot of behind the scenes growth experience that maybe they wouldn't have had if they were just on a feature team or working on one very small silo in a larger scheme of things. So I'm super proud of them though because they both ended up jumping in and not just taking a ticket and doing the work, but from the beginning they developed the mindset of I can fix this problem we're doing here, but hey, while I was thinking about it, this is an idea where we can maybe fix this down the line so we're not having, you know, four more tickets about it next month or whatever. And that was really encouraging for me. I loved encouraging them to take that route. And then I went the coaching as a mentor route with both of them. I met with them separately, met with them together. And then I guess the proud moment was when they started joining together behind the scenes. You know, they started doing pair programming together, bouncing ideas off of each other, encouraging each other. And that's the kind of growth that we want to see on teams, and especially for women in tech, especially any other group that's maybe less underrepresented in tech. And I'm in South Carolina, so that's not just race and gender and, you know, whether you went to college or not, that's stepped on in some form of way. But yeah, and that's kind of what led me into my interest in getting to the Agile Learning Institute, and what we do there too is my great experience there. I'm gonna add one more in real quick. It's a side note. This summer, I was asked to, do you know what alternative schools are?
Yes.
Okay, so I was approached by our school system here and asked to come up on the fly with a program for the alternative summer school. They're going to have one. They had gotten a grant. They had to spend the money really quickly, so they decided to buy a 3D printer, which I never 3D printed. And they're like, "Hey, this starts in 4 weeks. Do you want to write a curriculum and come up with a program and get a bunch of people and make this happen?" I said yes, because that's what I do. I say yes to things that sound awesome. So I gathered a
Yes.
group of volunteers. We learned how to, a lot of them knew how to 3D print, thank goodness. I learned how to 3D print. Most of them had never taught before or kind of volunteered in those areas. We went through the program, had amazing time. All of the kids had win moments, which changed my life, seeing those moments in them. The people who came and volunteered, they changed as humans, being in a different environment and having their own wins, like realizing they were capable of that. And then data-wise, after the program, we had amazing results, like a 93% success rate with students. So what that really translates to is a 93% of the students that went through that summer program, which it included other things, it wasn't just our tech program, but we were part of it. 93% of them were able to go back to their school and didn't come back to alternative school. Before the summer program, it was like 94% never left or were back within, 30 or 60 days. So what a massive
Right.
turnaround, and what a massive example of how we can give back to our community in even a short amount of time. You don't have to be super experts, but make such an impact on young adults in our community. Like, we can do that anytime.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's definitely huge, is how much you can do with so little if you are very focused.
Exactly.
And really dive in. This stuff, like, I guess one thing that's hard for a lot of people to grasp is that everyone doing these magical things, everyone building these crazy things and coding and doing all this and sometimes earning crazy money, sometimes not, whatever. All of these people are people. They are people just like you and me. We're all people. So just because, you don't know how to do something doesn't mean you can't. There is someone out there. Now, I mean, there are people who, of course, are a little smarter and a little more dedicated because they do nothing but sit in a dark room and kick out stuff. I may not ever be at this point working on space shuttles, but if I look over and I see somebody coding in C or something like that, and I'm like, oh, that just looks terrible. I mean, honestly, it's just time and pressure. And
Right.
I think a lot of people need to understand that. And, something like the program you have sounds like the Agile Learning Institute, for instance, could possibly help these people gain the confidence they need to understand that this stuff is within their grasp. And that's what I love about, programs like this is just kicking people off. Sometimes they just need that one little poke and then they just show so much promise. So, what got you into the Agile Learning Institute? You're obviously passionate about learning, but when did you start that? What exactly, is it that you push with them? You said you're a chairwoman. Is this like monthly meetings? Do you take part in the mentorship as well? How does that
Right.
look?
So, the Agile Learning Institute is a recognized nonprofit. I am not the founder. Mike Story is the founder. But I've known Mike for many years. He was actually really pivotal in influencing me just by being there as a human and kind of giving me that spark and that, "Hey, go get it. We're here for you" mentality when I first started tech. So the Agile Learning Institute is a collection of Mike and his friends who all are super experienced in tech. Most of them are retired or have 30, 40 years experience in tech. And basically they decided, "We have worked, now we want to do something to give back tangibly that makes an impact that we can see and makes a difference in the things we care about." So if we care about social justice, if we care about making room for everybody in tech, if we care about making sure that everybody has access and equity in tech, we're going to do this thing about it. So it's called the Agile Learning Institute, but it is not, we're not teaching the Agile methodology there, right? We do use Agile methods in it. But if you really think about the people we serve, who we serve the underdogs, basically. So another term can be underrepresented, but that's kind of this getting a connotation with it, right? But the some examples of people we serve is groups that come out of a program called Persevere. That Persevere teaches people who are incarcerated to code without internet, which is amazing. And then when they come out, we're the next step. We work with people who are, previous domestic violence targets, people who their town, their 1 mill in their town shut down. So that happened recently in North Carolina, just a few miles from us. And but there's no other resources really for good jobs, so they're in that state to start something new. And we call them new collar workers. So technically, you have a job, but you're living in paycheck to paycheck poverty, and you want to get out. So even when we look at those people for lots of different reasons, they may or may not be able to commit full time. They may be able to do 20 hours a week. They may be able to, they're single mom, work in the evening or while their kids watching the cartoon on Saturday. So what we do is we make it work for our apprentices. So the whole program, we do coaching as a mentor. It's one-on-one mentorship. We have a curriculum, but it's agile, can change. So basically, we do the generalist first as an apprentice. We use engineer kit, so that goes through things like clean code. What is architecture? Now these are language agnostic, so there's not necessarily coding in these. Security, tooling, working with data, human experience. What is the internet? That type of thing. And then we have four tracks that people can specialize in. So we have site reliability engineer, API engineer, data engineer, and user experience engineer. So once people kind of get this overall broad exposure and we start working through the curriculum, if I say, hey, you know what? I really like working with this data. Like, I just am so, it's just interesting to me. Like, where does this data go? What can we do with it? Once we can start picking up on those, then we can help them kind of pick a specialty. So it can be people who are brand new to tech. It can be people who, if you've come out of a boot camp or self-taught or college and you want to get that next step, it can be people who are mid-career and want to kind of change to the senior level or senior path to leadership, IC path to leadership path. So we have like career coaching services for that as well. But it's all free. It is completely free. We do not get paid. We put our own money to pay for the cloud stuff and all that. We put our time because we value you as a human. We value your time. And we know that even though there's lots of leaps and bounds being made with being able to teach yourself, with being able to go to a boot camp, not everybody still can take off 12 weeks from work. If you're a single mom, you may not be able to do it for 40 weeks. We understand life is life. And so we're not just teaching the code and exposing to the technology part, but we're really standing beside them and coming in with the confidence, coming in with the, we're trauma informed group. We take trainings on trauma informed. And especially in the South, there's trauma, whether you're coming out of prison, whether you had domestic violence, whether just being in a very low economic lifestyle for very long is very stressful, and there's a lot to learn on the tech side, and there's a lot to learn on the other side. And having genuine people who are willing to kind of share those things as you go and grow is a vital part of this process, and we fully believe that. So we are investing ourselves in people who will make tech in general better, and doing our part to make sure that those everybody has access.
Oh, that's fantastic. So I had an idea a while back, and it sounds like you guys might actually be doing this, but I'm not sure. So my idea was, and I unfortunately never got to execute because I'm just not made of money right now, unfortunately. I'd like to be. But so I was thinking of children who kind of end up with, really big life-threatening diseases, cancer and stuff like that. But, they spend so much time focusing on the disease. And once they do recover and they come out, then what? They've missed years of school or months of school or, I mean, even weeks of school can throw you off. But,
Yeah.
we're talking about usually the ones who actually miss and get held back grades and stuff like that and end up getting set back. Are these the types of people that could apply for the Agile Learning Institute?
I could definitely see that. Honestly, I had never thought of that perspective before, but that could be a great route. We're needing mentors and we're always open for apprentices. So we have a good group of mentors, but it'd be really great to find people who are knowledgeable in those areas too and passionate about that and help teach us or come on and mentor because that is a huge opportunity. They're in the hospital or in recovery, getting the chemo for hours and hours and hours a day. And I can't say for sure, but I could imagine I might feel unproductive. And especially if I'm then going back and feeling like I'm late in life. What a great thing to open up the whole world with technology where they could make games, they could learn to code, they could express themselves through that, give them a voice, and keep them connected to the outside world, to the community in a different way. Like, I love that idea. We should talk later about this.
Oh, yeah, no, I'd be more than happy to. Yeah, if things ever work out. That's always been my dream since I think 2009 is actually when I was running a small little computer store and I said, if this thing ever makes it, newsflash, it didn't. But if this thing ever makes it, turns into the next Best Buy or whatever, that was the idea. So
Yeah.
that's great to hear that, people are making strides to help people who, are in these types of situations, whether it's from that or whatever. So that's really great.
Yeah. And we've had
So
a
that's,
couple people, come up to us and ask about maybe doing a kids program for specific needs like autistic or different, just any different things like that. But we need people to come beside us to help us do that as well.
yeah. And I
Because
mean,
we
this could be
those will learn
kids,
life.
teenagers, even adults. Just, my idea was specifically kind of kids and getting them into computers and stuff like that, kind of
Yeah.
a lower level thing. But, now that I think about it, yeah, you've got adults who have lost major swaths of their life, and are practically unhireable in their existing fields, because of
Right.
injuries and stuff like that. So,
Yes. So
yeah,
retraining from
that's
injuries
definitely
is
something that's
another.
nice.
Yeah. Lots of people, there's lots of manual jobs that are also dangerous. So we talked about, okay, if the mill closes in the town and everybody worked at the mill, suddenly you have no path. But also, what if you just got injured on the job? What if you don't want to, your previous job, you'd have to be on disability if you couldn't physically lift 200 pounds or do what you're doing. But this gives another route. And honestly, I've talked to a lot of men around here who have been physically injured on the job, but there's such a disconnect between what tech is and the exposure they have that they don't even realize that that's a path. And there's some barriers to break down there too. It's kind of, there's so much talk about getting women into tech and getting underrepresented groups in tech, but there's a huge barrier just for getting men in general who just aren't exposed to that in their culture. But there's a ton of that. Like, we all bring value to the table. You get injured on the job, you can maybe make machinery or help design it, help do the coding for safety to keep somebody else from getting injured the same way you do. Like, it's just end limitless possibilities.
Yeah, I worked in the manufacturing area doing some IoT type stuff for a little while and definitely met some people who have had some pretty close calls. But also, it's sad that overall, I would say, my experiences in like Silicon Valley, SF, and all that, the whole area is a lot of people don't realize that somebody who has actually done the problem, worked with the problem you're trying to solve or whatever, whether it's manufacturing or whatever, with the right push, these people can they see solutions so quickly. And with the age of AI and everything, it's not really the syntax that's the problem. It's not the coding syntax. These people say, all right, we need to solve this problem. And to solve this problem, I need a thing that does this, if this, and this. It's all programming. All these solutions are programming, whether it's written in an essay or written in on a PowerPoint or whatever, it's still a flow of ideas. And I feel like something, again, like what you have to offer and whatnot can take some people that are absolute diamonds in the rough they could come through and solve some major problems pretty quickly.
Right. They're the diamonds that have been there shining, saying, hey, while
Yeah.
you're doing your design thinking, while you're making this product, before you're like imagining it, let's get the input of people who actually use it. Because can you imagine how many products are put out or services are put out that they think they're solving the problem, but they don't even realize what the problem really is because they're not getting on the level of the people who are actually using it in a real way. I blame the whole medical record system on that exclusively. If they ever talk to one nurse, they can fix that because it does not work.
Well, I mean, obviously that's by design if you're a conspiracy theorist, but that's another topic. And that's kind of the thing, I find that Silicon Valley is out there inventing problems, whereas we've got real problems on the ground, but they're either hard, too hard, or they don't seem like they're going to make enough money for a venture capitalist to scale it to billions. But it's all a volume play nowadays. We're kind of done with the idea of just creating good products that just stand on their own. You don't have to invent Uber. You could literally invent, I know people who have invented, or like just scripted a time clock over the weekend, and just made a better UX. It solves one small problem with a time clock. These people make six figures, and they just sit there and they just sell this program with occasional security updates, and they're good for 10 or 20 years at least, making six figures just off of like a time clock or something. And I think a lot of people miss that. I think these real world projects and solutions and things like that could really help a lot of people on the ground floor without reinventing Uber and creating the new SpaceX or whatever. So I don't know. I think we need more agile learning institutes out there to help people realize this value for sure.
And to help them realize the value in themselves, like even with the language we're using while we're talking, there is just an inherent power, unequal power thing, unequal value system. And really, one of my passions is like we are created with inherent value. I am the same person when I waited tables very horribly, as I am now. I made like $4 to $5 a day back then. Over six figures now, that was the harder work. Where's the value? There's a shift in the thinking. I do see it happening where these labels and just selling for profit and just getting to whatever level for a name is kind of going away. And the people who created the Agile Learning Institute is a good example of that. They decided, I'm going to retire early, and this is what I want to do with these skills. We see people choosing to work or not work for companies based on if they're standing with their actual values, with working with the community. Okay, you say you're for diversity, equality, and inclusivity. Why do you have not a single black person working on your team? Why is there no women on your software team? I don't want to be the first. It's kind of got shifted with the whole layoff thing that's happened, but in reality, people are coming back to to what their values and doing good work. I can't talk about it too much, but I am, and Agile Learning Institute is pairing with me on a solving a real world problem with the family court system and legal system here in South Carolina, which is a It, every single person said, you're never going to change it. The professionals in all those areas have said, watch me. Next year, you will be changed. There are people going to the court now and it's changing. But the only disconnect was just like academia can sometimes be 10 years behind. Court systems know almost nothing about technology. Yet if you're, especially if you're looking at an abuse situation, they're attacking technology-wise. There's no handbook for how do I make this admissible for court. There's very little legislation or any kind of rules for judges to look at and be guided by for technology that is evidence, So I'm not gonna get too much into it, but we can all do something like that that makes the real world problems less and I fully 100% believe that we are moving in that direction. It may be slower, but it's coming out.
If you have a complaint, it's worth money or it's worth fixing or both. You know, it's That's kind of the thing. Like, technology can fix a lot of people problems. Unfortunately, there are still people problems that will always be people problems,
Yeah.
and they will always fight it. But I think that, there are definitely opportunities out there for solutions for things like that. And, I grew up in Georgia, and we've had our fair share of crazy legal issues. I will not even begin to get into that. But if you look up where I'm from and do a little bit of cross-referencing with the news, you're going to find several big cases have come out of my hometown,
Yeah.
unfortunately. So that's kind of a thing. But that's awesome that, this thing is doing so much stuff. I'm looking at the website now. I'm seeing, a lot of opportunity for sponsorship and things like that. Yeah.
I just want to point out, we do have different options for sponsorship. We'd love to get donations because, like I said, we are just paying for everything out of our pocket. Currently, our apprentices, we don't have funds to pay them. But the reality is, if we have people who are working at fast food or working, a night shift, if we could pay them at least an equal fast food wage so that they could fully focus, on learning, that would be a huge help forward. So we're looking for companies or people who are willing to partially or fully sponsor a student. We have some companies who've donated laptops. So if your company's changing in laptops, instead of just getting the credit, donate to us. You still get the tax write-off. And then literally somebody is able to participate because they have a computer and they literally did not have a computer before. $10 a month, $100, like whatever way you want to help us, we will make a way it happen for you and would be super helpful. It doesn't just have to be money. So we are looking for mentors, of course, and you get excellent free training on coaching as a mentor, just immaculate training. So that's a huge resource for you. And if you don't have the time to commit to a whole mentorship, volunteer. Can you help do some code reviews on our GitHub? Can you come and give some ideas on architecture design? Can you, help review PRs that the apprentices are putting out? Whatever way that you feel like you can give, we can use that and we will be grateful for that. So, whatever time commitment, whatever area you love, just let us know and we'll work it out the agile way.
Yeah. I imagine it'd be great to see some AI solutions to speed that up and help balance that load too.
Yeah.
It's not perfect, but it is a great first pass, especially like code quality, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm finding, a lot of educators especially are looking into doing graders and stuff like that out of these types of solutions. And I think it's huge. Again, AI could end up displacing a lot of people, but it sounds like it can also help a lot of people as well. So I think
Right.
time will tell exactly where this ends up as we progress through this wackiness that started, what, a year ago?
I
Than
don't even
that?
know. There's
It's
a time
just
warp going
insane.
on. Like it's just AI and pre-AI besides the AI well thing that came before that. It's
Yeah,
just a
absolutely.
point to why, become a generalist, get this exposure to different areas so you have that knowledge base rather than just very specific skill based on one thing. We know AI is coming in, so it's a time to not necessarily be scared of it, but let it lift all boats, whatever that saying is, the rising tide lifts all boats. It gives us a chance to step away from the mundane and allow ourselves to go to the next level, allow ourselves to learn the skills to be able to see the bigger picture in software development life cycle. Like so many developers I know, including myself, don't they didn't get that big picture view. But if we start from there, I believe it really creates a higher level engineer, and then they can really find the areas that they're truly passionate about when they're exposed to many areas.
So what would you think is the number, like if somebody was coming out of something non-tech to start, what is the number one thing you to like, where would they start? Tell me one spot, like go read this, go watch this, go do this right now, and then the rest depends on this. Is there like a linchpin or, something like that that you would recommend someone start with immediately?
So I would say if you are a woman, join Women Who Code. So that's not a specific resource, but I'm a director for Women Who Code Greenville as well. Women Who Code is a worldwide organization. It's like 147 countries. There will be a group near you. If there's not, you can still join any group. And I say that because they provide tons of really great learning resources. They provide that community. You can still get exposed to a lot of different areas. They have the in-person connection. You can do online if you want. So that's a really great starting point because you can't say, go, just learn JavaScript because half the people are going to hate it and then not pursue tech. Same thing with Python. You just can't funnel them down. I would also say come check out the Agile Learning Institute. Check out meetup.com and see if there's just a meeting of developers in your local area. Just go show up, see what happens and see, what the people are like. See what things you hear that are said that pique your interest. I really am a firm believer in just getting that community connection first, getting the exposure and just listening and being part of it is naturally going to help you decide what the next step is. Because just Googling, you're going to be in 84 rabbit holes or you're going to be on YouTube for the next 90 years trying to decide the next thing to do. So get with the people and that can help you get your path.
That's great. And I know a lot of people say that they just can't find these things because they live in, in isolated types of areas, most of the Midwest or whatever, they live places that aren't near a large city, so they feel like they have no access. So, meetup.com seems like, especially post-COVID, that it does have a lot of great resources, a lot of great remote groups and things like that. And there are several Slack groups and Discord groups out there as well. So basically, the idea is to find this group. And then, obviously, me and you have definitely been very loud on LinkedIn lately. It sounds like once you get that group, you can start following those people and start getting public. And I think that's a big hurdle for a lot of people. They are afraid of public, but it seems like it's something that would help to overcome for sure, something that's very useful. So,
Definitely.
what about somebody who is in tech then, like QA or something, or they've already kind of started these things? What do you think might be the most impactful thing to learn first? If you kind of have an understanding, you've built computers, you've done this types of stuff, you've had your hands on. But what do you think is the most impactful thing to learn first?
So, because I love Python, I'm gonna say Python. It's very
Love
similar
that.
to how we speak. You don't have to know all the under the hood stuff from the get-go. And if you learn Python, if your shop uses Ruby, that's pretty similar. If there's going to be somewhere that you can get in and kind of getting your hands dirty in ways that are maybe different than your job. I would also say if you are working in tech in a different kind of role, reach out to your manager, reach out to a dev in whatever area you think you want to go to and say, hey, this is the path I want. Make it known. Hey, is there a career path to this? Do we have a training program? If there's not, hey, dev over here that I like, can I just listen to you pair program? Can I just listen to you as you work through a problem so I can start learning from you? Can we start talking about some things? So therefore, you're advocating for yourself and saying, this is what I would like for my career. You're my manager. Your job is to help me do my job that I'm paid for, but also help me grow. So I'm asking for that explicitly. And then you've got, hey, a coworker, I think you're really awesome. I want to learn from you. I don't need a huge time commitment, but I would really love to just start observing and getting a sense of what you do. And then if there is some little projects you can jump in on, or you see a problem that you think you can solve, do it on your off time. Not a whole lot. Don't work your whole weekends. Totally not for that. But just make a little solution or make a proposal. Look up a proposal format template. Write out a proposal saying, hey, I see we have this problem. This is what's holding us back for it. Here's how we can solve it. I've researched these two tools. I think this is how we should go. And just get your hands dirty. You don't necessarily have to ask for permission to come up with solutions to problems. Don't go push something to master without, permission to do that or spend half your week doing it. But Make it clear that's your path. Make sure that your job is aligned. Use the resources at hand, and then be bold. As you go down that path, do not get stuck in the cycle of the rabbit and the carrot. You know, don't be doing be being paid QA and doing software dev roles and being told for 3 years you're going to get a raise. Like, advocate for yourself and learn as you go. Get those kind of skills from your coworkers as well, not just the technical skills. But went on a rant. Start with a simple language, use your resources, make your plan, get buy-in.
That makes sense. No, I love that. And yeah, it sounds like pop on Twitch occasionally and listen to people fight stuff and
Yes.
see that you are not alone. You know, there's everybody screws up, everybody breaks something. You know, as long as the culture's right, I think you can fight through that and it's just going to make you a better programmer.
Definitely. And
So,
reframing the
yeah.
failure, reframing failure is it's like one of the biggest things in tech, because failure does not mean the same thing as the rest of the world. And that fear of breaking something is so huge. That's debilitating for a lot of people.
It's
Like, go
definitely
break
not the
something on
medical world.
purpose so you can get over it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Make sure I have a
Absolutely.
backup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, this has been really, really fun. I'm really excited to share this, especially the agile learning stuff. You know, I will make sure I share all the links that you provide me, everything else. So if anybody wants to become involved, they can. Hopefully, if nothing else, people will start throwing some laptops at you because I know, just like me, we've all got boxes of laptops around and companies need to get that tax liability off. So, you know, and as much as I hate to say it, when you do lay people off, they do send those laptops back. Those laptops are old. Get them somewhere that matters. So if you're going to do something somewhat awful, like lay off a bunch of people, at least do something good afterwards and donate those laptops. Let's get something better going on after that. But
Definitely.
anyway, it's been an absolute pleasure, Christina. I've had a wonderful time talking about this stuff. It's definitely been a much more positive podcast than some of the other ones where all we're doing is just complaining about Terraform license models. So I love that. It's great. Is there anything else you'd like to tell the people before we sign off?
I just want to say thank you again for having me on, and everybody who's listening, I just encourage you to step outside yourself, take a risk, and give back to the community. Most of us are in really privileged spots in life, and you might find out that you really, really love it.